changing the way America thinks. It's the voice of reason, Tim Constantine.
Everybody, it's Tim Constantine with you on the Capitol Hill Show. You know, here in Washington, we tend to talk about things in terms of how we are divided up. Democrat, Republican, rich, poor, black, white. There's always a way to divide us up, but there's one way, well, it kind of brings us all together. We're all the same in one way. We, many of us, the vast majority of us, are parents. And I will say, of those parents, about 100% make a blunder somewhere along the way. We're all learning as we do it. We all do our best. We all want the best for our kids, but sometimes you need a little assistance along the way. Patty Whipfler is an author. She has two grown sons, lives in the beautiful city of Palo Alto, California, and has been working with parents and children for about 40 years. Has a simple, powerful parenting approach that helps, and God knows we can all use it. Hi, Patty. How are you?
Hi there, Tim. I'm good. I'm very glad to be with you.
Now, there's a the title here is so simple, and yet it's true. It says, listen, five simple tools to meet your everyday parenting challenges. It's that first word, I swear, is the most important one. It's very easy sometimes as the parent, as the authority figure, to just say, well, that's just the way it's going to be. But listening is a key part of parenting, isn't it?
It certainly is. Listening is sort of it's the way our children begin to feel connected to us. And when children feel connected, they are their very best selves. When they feel safe, when they feel seen, when they feel like we can pay attention, you know, if they need us to, that's when they can think, they can share, they can learn. And so listening really promotes the connection that is fuel for the child's mind. And listening sort of opens up a two-way street between us and our children. And when the street is two-way, children's intelligence builds. They learn from our judgment, and that's really what we want.
Do not shut them down, because it could be a permanent... You know, my mom used to say to me, you know, don't keep making that face. It might freeze that way. But the truth is, what we practice every day really does develop who we are long-term. And if you shut your kid down every day, guess what? That's going to become normal for them.
Yeah, it's, you know, we don't have to do a perfect job. I think parents, you know, the hustle and bustle of life in the United States is really intense. And I think parents worry that they have to do a perfect job, or that there's no moment when they are permitted to make a mistake or be a little gruff. But our children are very forgiving. What matters is taking some time every day to really connect, and often early in the day makes a big difference. If children can feel connected to us before they go to school or off to daycare or before they do their chores, they are much happier people, and so are we. It's like we are parents not just to get stuff done. We're parents because we love our children, and we want our love to get through. And when you, it's kind of like we set aside meal times to nourish our children physically every day. We make sure they get sleep. But we haven't really figured out how to make sure they get a sense of connection from us in regular doses through the day. And when you begin to do that as a parent, things begin to go much better, and you feel much more pleased with yourself and with your child, because connection is what we want too.
In the book, you have a couple of interesting points here that I think would surprise moms and dads. And one of them is, you don't have to reward or punish a kid for them to learn the lesson, for them to cooperate, for them to do it right from that point forward. What do you mean by that?
Well, rewards and punishments are inferior means of influencing children's behavior. They don't work that well. I mean, you can give a child a timeout today for, you know, not putting away their blocks, but tomorrow they're not going to want to put away their blocks either. And then you have to do another timeout. Whereas if when a child doesn't want to put away their things, if you move in and you say, sweetie, you deliver a limit. Sweetie, you need to put away your blocks or whatever it is. You deliver a limit, and then you just stay there and you connect. You make eye contact. You listen to how your child feels about not wanting to put things away. and they can have a big cry, they can have a tantrum. You let the feelings roll out, while your sense of connection, your caring, rolls in. And the reason children don't cooperate, the reason their behavior goes off track, is almost always because there's emotional tension they're carrying that's fouling up their ability to think. And when we listen to the feelings about the limits that we set or the expectations that we have, they then feel like they begin to feel like we're on their side.
Are you suggesting a tantrum is acceptable? Because when you say let them have their tantrum, but doesn't that somehow reinforce the idea that that's okay? So the next day when they get to put their blocks away, they throw a tantrum again. And when you're at the grocery store, they throw a tantrum. And it seems like perhaps, I understand you got to let a kid have his feelings, but I also understand there's a real world there, and you can't let the kid just flail away at any given time.
You're right. You're right. However, having tantrums and having a big cry is actually an innate cleansing process. Tension builds through every day for children as well as for parents. And that tension gets held by children, and the more tension they feel, the more hurt and separate they feel, the less well they can function, the less well they can listen, the less well they want to be part of the family. And when we allow an outlet for that tension, even though it's messy, even though it's, you know, not approved in public, when you allow an outlet for that tension, your child begins to feel connected to you again, their brain begins to work, and you don't have to lecture or teach or, cajole. You don't have to do any of those things. You just say, you know, no, we need to leave the store now. And if you listen to the feelings, your child feels so much closer to you afterwards, and the rest of the day goes very much better because they've had, you know, it's like sneezing and coughing. When you've got gunk inside and there's an infection, natural thing is to sneeze and to cough. Those are things you want to do in order to get the gunk out. And crying and tantrums are the natural things you want your child to be able to do in order to get the gunk out. And the way that it works well to bind the family together is if you connect while they are offloading bad feelings, you just see a very different person at the end of the tantrum. So these are useful, and this has been a muddle for parents for eons. You know, crying looks like it's not useful behavior, but actually it performs a very important function. And
are we learning, though? I mean, there's as an adult, there are times and places for mm-hmm. things. You know, as an adult, I may be frustrated with a situation professionally, but I can't throw a mm-hmm. tantrum. You know, I can't. I have to handle it professionally. I may go blow off some steam on my own, but if I'm in that conference room with 12 other people, I can't go crazy. So at what point do you start teaching tact? Do you start differentiating normal emotion and that you have to be able to handle that?
Yep, yep. And what we find is that over time, children do handle that. So if you have an aggressive child and you're allowing them to offload big feelings, because fear fuels aggression and they've gotten scared and therefore they're very impulsive around other children. When you allow them an outlet for those feelings, it's very messy at first. It's like handling poop. It's like we don't force children to sit on the toilet from the time they're 1 month old. You know, we have lots of provisions for handling the messiness of, you know, the physical cleansing process there. And what works really well is to allow children a lot of slack in their first 5, 6, 7 years to offload the feelings that come from being so vulnerable in such a big and fast-paced world. And when you do that, children will become very resilient. So they have fewer and fewer and fewer tantrums and fewer and fewer and fewer cries over time because they're not carrying so much emotional stuff from one day to the next. There's an outlet for it. And you provide the outlet, and oftentimes children are really leaders in their class and the child who can connect with lots of different children. And then when they come home, they have their tantrums and their upsets from all the little dings and scrapes that they got into during the day, go back and are leaders in their class and really fast learners again. So we provide a safe place to offload that stuff so that children can think and function well out in public. But when you're first starting, there's a backlog of feelings that have been built up over several years, and once you listen, they go, oh, man, I feel so much better after a good cry. I think I need another one. So you're just aiding a natural process, and the results over time are excellent. One of the things that has been proven in research is that what allows adolescents to get through adolescence without getting involved in drugs or violence or dropping out of school or getting pregnant early, you know, all of the kind of ways that kids can create disaster in their lives. What allows that is a child who feels connected to their parents. And when you listen, you are building that connection. And when you listen throughout childhood, your teenager is not going to go, oh, forget my mom, forget my dad. You know, I'm not going to talk to them
right when
they come up against something difficult.
I guess here's the only question. I know we're up against the clock here, but here's my only question. Isn't it possible to listen and still, at times, to instill discipline, to allow a child to do whatever emotional thing pops into their head at any given time seems undisciplined to me. Seems as though you are teaching a lesson. And I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive, do they? That you teach them, you know what, that the repeated tantrum perhaps is not okay, but you're still listening to them. They don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Well, there are times when we can't listen, you know.
I got a 12-year-old. I've never had a time where I couldn't listen. I haven't. I mean, he's my priority. He's more important than anything. So I don't know. All right. The name of the book is Listen. You have to go to the book to get the answer to my question. 5 Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges. Patty Whipler is the author. Patty, thanks so much for taking time with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim. All your questions are excellent.
I appreciate it. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Tim Constantine is America's Voice of Reason.